Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hang in.
Dude,
there it is.
That's Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
Smiley, it finally happened. We have been watching, I feel like we've been watching the first nine Fast and Furious movies with the exact same plot line, the exact same ending every week. And then we flipped on the 10th, and lo and behold, something happened that we could not have expected out of this movie script. Listen, I think it's appropriate here, rather than me try to explain or me try to sum up what this week was like, I'm just going to throw it to another movie for a quote that sums us up.
Happy learned how to putt. Uh-oh.
Scotty learned how to putt. The PGA Tour is in big trouble. And to be fair to Scotty, it's not that he necessarily learned how to putt. It's just that he had a little bit of time in the putting wilderness, and he appears to be back, at least on the strength of his Sunday performance. We are definitely going to get into his putting performance this week and unpack that at length. But let's just kind of start bigger picture on a theme or a trend you and I have discussed the last couple of weeks, which is just the season of the long shot, kind of going hand in hand with a lack of superstars winning golf tournaments, right? And so here we are, signature event, the world number one wins. He's being chased by, you know, a reigning U.S. Open champ, some other big names up there, Shane Lowry, Will Zalatoris. But there was something maybe anticlimactic about the fact that Scotty wins by five shots. And so I'm just curious, the question that I want to pose to you and just have you answer this from two perspectives, yours and what's best for the PGA Tour, is in the wake of this win, would you rather see a star like Scotty win a tournament like this in blowout fashion, or are you more excited or more interested in watching some of the finishes we've seen maybe earlier in the year with players who weren't household names winning, you know, by a shot or coming down to the last putt of the tournament or winning in a playoff?
I think there's a place for both, right? You know, I think that's what the viewer likes, is the fact that you can turn on the TV and watch the number one player in the world, you know, go in, completely dominate, man, and win by five shots. Like that to me reminds me of my youth, you know, when I used to turn the TV on to watch just Tiger dismantle golf courses and fields. And sometimes it made for boring TV, but until you maybe switch it on in your brain, that's like, holy crap, this guy might be that much better than everybody else. It's like, okay, you're watching potential greatness in a guy, right? So that to me is a turn on from a viewer standpoint. But yeah, I think there's a time and a place for the other things too. We're talking about other players, you know, finding their moments that are potential stars. You know, I think we've seen a good mix of that this year. And there's no doubt that we've lost a ton of depth on the PGA Tour. There's still plenty of depth and talent, but we've just lost a lot of names that people recognize. And I think that's been a huge turnoff a little bit from people wanting to watch every week, because they just don't like the look of the leaderboards. But it's not like the play isn't the same number that you would typically see. You know, you're missing, you know, a Jon Rahm and a you know, a Cam Smith or Brooks Koepka, where if those players were on the leaderboard, would it have made people turn the TV on more? I mean, maybe. I still think our leaderboard was so good heading into Saturday and Sunday, And we didn't get a drama-filled Sunday, but I think it was, you know, really cool to see a guy like Scottie Scheffler find a aspect of his game that we've been talking in nauseam about and completely just, I mean, he played in a flawless round yesterday, shooting 6 under. That was the lowest round by a couple shots. And if you'd have told me going into the day that Scottie Scheffler was going to lead the field in putting that day, I would say, did he win by 6 or did he win by 7? You know,
I mean, it's, you know, to kind of put a bow on where we began, we finally had an American superstar win, and I think it's going to open up the door for more wins. It just might be that all of them might be Scotty going forward if he continues to putt like this, because it was truly insane looking at some of these stats of strokes game putting, where we started on Thursday, you know, where he loses a shot and a half to the field. He's 55th out of 79 players, still post a 2 under 72. And then just kind of steadily got better the next couple of days, gained a half shot on Friday, gained a shot and a half on Saturday, and then gains nearly 4 strokes gained putting on Sunday to finish first out of 58 players, shoots a 666. I heard a really interesting stat going into that final round where I think Russell Henley was on the second green, and he was to that point, he'd made all 50 of the putts through the first 3 rounds he'd had inside 10 feet. And then, and this was on SiriusXM PGA Tour Radio, Will Haskin and Dennis Paulson were going back and forth. And then they said, hey, look, I wonder where Scotty would be on the leaderboard if he had the same sort of record to that point putting. And he would have made 8 more putts. He would have started the day 17 under. So it's just wild to see then stacking on top of that a day where he does see the ball go in the hole. And honestly, not one of his best ball striking days. But I mean, just looking at what he did, looking at those stats, you know, where do we need to put the PGA Tour on notice in a big way? I mean, did you see enough there? I know you were walking with Will Zalatoris and Wyndham Clark, but just in the highlights and looking back, you know, is this look like a one-off to you, or could this be a real confidence builder for Scotty going forward?
Well, I've been saying it for a while. Let's not judge him based on what we saw on the West Coast. There's too many good players that are fantastic putters that have terrible West Coast putting statistics. And I saw Wyndham personally at the Hero World Challenge watching him putt on Bermuda grass, where I felt like he was, you know, really making a lot of progress. And then, of course, he struggles on the West Coast. He putts well in Phoenix. He just, unfortunately, his stats were skewed because of 2-3 putts on Sunday, missing really short putts inside of 4 feet that he just kind of lost focus on a week that was really long and a day where he literally did everything right. He was making those 8 to 12 footers you got to make on Sunday. He still shot a 66 and ended up a couple shots back. And that's with missing a couple 3.5 footers on the last 6 holes. So, and no, it's not a one-off. I think he's a very good putter on certain types of grasses. Currently, I think he's got a long way to go, maybe on some Poana or just being a good all-around putter everywhere. But I think he's going to putt well on bent greens and Bermuda greens, or just have the capability of having a really hot putter, because he just needs to be average and have the days that he can turn, you know, his typical 67s into 62s. You know, that's really all he needs to win golf tournaments. It's just those extra 3 or 4 putts on a hot day.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, just the margins there, because, you know, as mentioned, imagine if he had a great ball striking day and putted like this. I mean, we're talking about a 5-shot runaway win that could have been even more, which is wild.
His tee to green statistics said he was 6th yesterday. So
yeah, well, I think approach maybe settled in the 20s. There were a lot of up and downs 20, early
it's
on.
It's a 21, but I think he had a couple wind gusts yesterday on the par threes. And who can blame the guy? You know, he can't see the wind, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's the thing too, is like some of those, Scotty is a guy who can do it all when he's playing well, but adding putting to that, it's like, you know, I mean, it's like Thanos, the glove. He's like putting I've not actually seen the movie, so I'm doing like a bad reference here, but I've seen the GIFs of the glove, and then he just snaps his fingers, and then that's what I see Scotty doing to the rest of these fields if he putts well the rest of this year. I got to stop down here for all the putter sickos out there, all the tinkerers that just, you know, shout out you guys, because first of all, add the Spider Tour X to my attic wish list. Need to get my hands on one of those after seeing Scotty roll it. But just kind of detailing his journey, because it's been something we've been talking about and reporting. And the PGA Tour put out a little report of what he had in this bag this week. And so it was a Spider Tour X, half inch longer than his previous gamer. Features an L neck hosel and a True Path Alignmentaid with a full sight line on top. He switched because he wants an increased MOI. It's 3 degrees of lop and a 72-degree lie angle. So just, you know, and he's been a blade guy for a while and been made a lot of different changes going back from 22 into 23. But this is actually a different mallet. We saw him using a mallet for two FedEx Cup playoff events last year. This is a different version of that mallet. We'll see if it sticks.
When you read equipment stuff, all I can think about is Anchorman. You know, I don't speak Spanish, Baxter. All of that was just over my head.
I do it for the nerds out there. You're just
talking to yourself.
I'm like the teacher on Charlie Brown. It's wah, 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 wah. Yeah, no, that's for all the nerds out there who are wanting to know, and really for myself, so I can just read that out loud and imprint in my brain so I can try to track one of those down. There's been an interesting discussion around Scotty, you know, related to is there an actual, you know, technical improvement that's happened here with the mallet? So we'd love to kind of start there, and then I'd love to hear Scotty in his own words responding in the winner's press conference. But let's start there, just of you know, where you feel like the biggest improvement was made for him, whether it was a technical thing or just looking at something different and psychologically being in a better place on the greens.
You know, I just happened to run into Phil Kenyon on the putting green on Friday, and it was interesting because I feel like everybody's asking him about Scotty's putting. You could tell their entire team is annoyed by it. And I kind of caught him, and with, you know, he was just, you know, basically saying just, you know, the changes they made to the putter. Scotty likes it. What he said was he isn't using the line on his ball like he was. You know, he was very like meticulous on getting the line of this ball to match correctly with the aimer on the putter, and he said that was like kind of giving him he was overthinking a little bit about, oh, I gotta match it perfectly or I'm not gonna make the putt. And now he just puts the golf ball down and uses the aimer on the top of the putter head, and what Phil told me is that it's allowing him to feel more creative, which I agree with. You know, sometimes for someone like Scotty, who's, you know, when you watch him play golf, it's just like point and shoot. You know, it's for him, I think if he can get in that creative mode behind the golf ball and start picturing what he's seeing, and then gets over the ball and keeps that same picture, instead of going from like creating the picture from behind the ball or over the ball, and then you start lining up, and then you go into like in this brain that wants everything to be right and specific, like an OCD type of mentality. And you go from like this creative mode into the other side of your brain, which is the thinking technical mode. And those two things just don't really mesh well, or at least you lose that picture and your ability to be creative on fast greens where you're playing 6 footers outside of the hole. So besides Phil mentioning the line of the ball, he just said that Phoenix really kind of like took a lot out of him. I think he felt like he should have won that week. So those were the couple like just little nuggets I got from Phil, which I thought was pretty cool. And then the fact that I definitely got wind from their team that like they didn't want to talk about the putting anymore. They were tired about us talking about it as well.
Well, I mean, no better way to end that discussion than to go out and do what he did this week. And now if we are talking about the putting, it's going to be how great it is. That's really interesting, because to me, it's so much of Scotty's game is home cooked. You know, the feet shuffling around, you know, some of his sort of angles of attack maybe look different from what the sort of tour standard is. But obviously he does it incredibly well. I mean, he does it better than anyone else on tour in the world right now. And so it's interesting when you get to the green, you know, trying to kind of bottle up that same sort of essence of who you are as a player. And it feels like that if we're talking about field putters, usually in your head, when you say that, you think of a guy who uses a blade, and then a mallet is almost sort of moving you more in the direction of, the broomstick or the arm lock or something that's more of like, hey, I'm using a system so I can take, you know, kind of feel and creativity out of it. So really interesting to hear that from Phil Kenyon, and maybe the smaller aspects of that, where the thing that's taking the robotic aspect out of it is not using a line on the ball anymore, and letting the built-in features of this mallet he's gone to kind of take that ease his mind in that direction a little bit. So that's interesting intel, and one to, you know, obviously keep an eye on to see if this holds up, with the players this week and going forward. Let's take a listen to Scotty here. This is just him on that same topic after winning yesterday.
I'm curious, how much of it would you attribute to the actual club, and how much to kind of between the ears, some of the stuff you're talking about of kind of quieting your...
Yeah,
yourself?
I mean, I think it's, you know, it has a lot to do with the stuff we talked about on Monday, keeping the mind as quiet as possible. And, you know, part of the problem is just trying too hard. You know, it's frustrating to not be... you know, not have the best of myself, just because I know that I can putt really well. It's not like, you know, I've been a bad putter my whole career. I've just gone through a stretch where it's been tough. And, I think this week I did a really good job of not letting the misses get to me. Teddy did a really good job of keeping me in a good headspace. And, you know, we stayed positive out there, and I hit a lot of good putts, this week.
So that's interesting to me for a couple of reasons. I mean, obviously it aligns with what you just heard from Phil, but we saw some early week frustration out there. We saw some turns and some sort of, you know, venting and some swung putters in the air. How did those comments land for you?
Well, if I played that golf course and didn't lose my mind and get frustrated, like, it's the most human thing that any golfer would experience at Bay Hill.
Yeah.
Dude, that golf course was so mother effing hard. And I'm serious. Like, it was a US Open test, and
wow.
But it's not my favorite layout. Like, I just think it's a little goofy at times, you know, like 13 yesterday downwind, like you can't hold that green, like even with wedges, like there's so many things about the golf course that don't make sense with how hard they make it play. Now, did we get the best players rising to the top, and is 15 under or even second place at 10 under the winning score where we want it? Yeah. Maybe it just shows how good these guys are now. But I just picture now this is a bit of a side turn here, and I'm not going to go too long on it, but with rolled back equipment on this golf course, I'm telling you, if it's what I think the golf ball might do on a windy day, it's like, what?
Right. Well, that is a tangent. That's a yarn worth pulling on, because I just wonder how they're going to get to where they need to go on the golf ball, because there are different ways you can engineer it to achieve, you know, the less speed in the golf ball. And one of the ways to do that is to add more spin back into the ball. And so, yeah, kind of your point, you know, some, like, I think it was a Saturday where it was like 88 degrees and blowing 30 miles an hour.
It was brutal.
Hitting balls and it's spinning all over the place. I mean, it would be carnage. And that's the wild thing is there. We already are seeing carnage with the current golf ball. So, rollback will be, we might get a few interesting ones early on before we settle on a.
I think the only PGA Tour event where I want to see the rollback and play is TPC Craig Ranch. I just think, like, what a place to test out the rollback. We don't need to do it at Bay Hill. Let's do it at a place where they shoot 35 under every time.
Let's make them use hickory clubs and bolata balls at TPC Craig Ranch, a real historic venue. I think this is just the charm of the game. It's what Byron Nelson would be proud of that. I think, you know, just hitting mashies off of AstroTurf, living AstroTurf, Zoysia grass at TPC Craig Ranch. Yeah. One more from Scotty, just on the putter itself. I want to hear in his words how he feels about this new flat stick. So here's him being asked, you know, is he going to use this putter for a while?
Do you feel like you've found the putter you'll be using for a while?
I mean, hopefully. I think I like not having to line the ball up. You know, I line this putter up well in the middle of the face. It's very good visually. I try not to focus too much on the results, but my process was really good this week. And, you know, the results so far are pretty tough to argue with, I'd say.
I got to say, as a sicko tinkerer, like, nothing resonated more deeply for me yesterday than hearing him say, yeah, hopefully. Like, I know that world. As we sort of exit this equipment section with Scotty, there's something that caught my eye as I was looking through his, you know, winner what's in the bag article on PGA Tour, and curious to sort of pick your brain on this, because I saw his 50 degree wedge and his 56 degree wedge. The 50 has 12 degrees of bounce on it, and the 56 has 14 degrees of bounce on it. And I think we've been sort of accustomed, you know, to, hey, the better players use less bounce because, you know, they can just find the bottom easier, and they're so skilled, and bounce is maybe a tool for a lesser skilled player. I'm curious if you can explain to someone who doesn't maybe understand this as well as you do at a tour pro level, you know, would more bounce on Scotty's wedges be a product of him having a steeper angle of attack? Or is this like something he did specific to this week at Bay Hill? Why would that be a feature of his wedge setup?
Was it 60? How much bounce does 60 have?
They don't show bounce on the 60 because it's a proto, which I assume they have some sort of custom grind. It's a 60 and a half degree, and it's a T grind. So I assume there's less bounce there, but on the other two, no idea.
I mean, it's typical to have like mid to higher bounces on like your other wedges for sure. Helps get through the turf better on wedge shots. Better for around the greens out of the rough. I'm not sure. It really just kind of depends what the 60 is. I'm not like a bounce expert. I don't claim to be. I just know kind of how it works and how it's used. This week it was really easy to chip. Like the lies were perfect. The rough was so thick. So you really are just, you would like to have a little bit more bounce and heavier rough, and you would probably defer down to a 56 degree a lot, especially if it was sitting halfway up. So the ball wouldn't roll up the face, which is what you typically see when that ball is sitting halfway up in the rough, where a lot of people are like, what do you mean halfway in the rough? It's like, well, what the rough they play on tour, the ball cannot all, it doesn't necessarily get all the way on the ground or sit on top. So it's this middle layer is where the ball sits, and you got to find a way to get shallow and use a little bit more bounce. Same goes with heavier bunkers. When there's more sand in the bunkers, you're going to want to use more bounce versus less bounce and defer down to a sand wedge versus a lob wedge. So there's my bounce. There's my bounce.
There's your bounce spiel. and listen, we'll get back to balls in the rough, you know, being,
and that was talking
up,
bounce.
Halfway down. Yeah, that was talking bounce. That was your talking bounce segment. Look forward to that, or maybe don't for future shows. So last couple of years for Scotty, schedules look like API, players, match play, then the Masters. No match play this year, but in his winner's press conference, Scotty confirms he's going to play Houston this year in that same calendar spot. He's played Houston four times. Best finish was a T2 in 2021. His most recent appearance in 2022, he finished T9. So this is a place where he's had some success. So look, he won the 2022 Masters. He's the defending champ at the Players. Worth noting here, following that first API win of his in 2022, he followed that up by winning in his next start at the match play and then at the Masters. So this time of year is good to him. Are we ready to go out on a limb here and say, could we see Scotty win in four consecutive starts? Is that in the realm of possibility?
Ooh, yeah. Dude, yeah, I really think so. I just think about this week. I think he's the dude to beat this week. I think you got to stripe your way around this golf course. I think putting out here is not going to be an issue. So, yeah, I think he could win this week. I think Houston, the field will be watered down. And then the Masters is a place that I picked him to win at the beginning of the year. So, yeah, I think there's a pretty good possibility that he could win the next three events. And that's, isn't that crazy to say? I mean, that's why when it's we talk totally about just like the viewing experience on the weekend, it's like, oh, well, I turned it off because Scotty was up by this much. It's like, dude, this is what Tiger used to do.
Yeah. I mean, and literally we're combining a guy who had Tiger prime ball striking last year with a guy who, if he's, you know, puts it the way he did on Sunday, just runs away with it. I mean, I think to get back to that initial question, because I asked you this, and I think, you know, my opinion on it is I'm in your camp where it's like we're watching greatness. And I think maybe there's part of it, too, where it's this riddle we've been trying to solve with Scotty. And to see it finally come good is like, oh, wow. If this continues, his potential is limitless. Like he could win every single week. I mean, you know, and looking at his schedule, the conversation we're having right now, it's not absurd to say he could win four consecutive starts. Like, I don't even think you'd get that good of betting odds on that because of, you know, just what we saw in that Sunday round. We'll see if it holds up.
The one thing, just talking about Scotty's schedule that I was actually thinking about this yesterday on the golf course. And what Tiger was really good about was playing less, but being ready to win when he did show up. And I think Scotty right now has played a lot of golf, like up to this point in his career, to where I think he can start really tightening up his schedule if he wanted to. And I know like they're expecting a baby in the next however many mm-hmm. months. Maybe that changes things for him as the years go on, to where he plays a little less, and when he shows up, he's ready to win. Because the more you play, the harder it is to win every week, just from a mental perspective. Like, you just don't have the energy to be able to win every week. And Tiger was so good about, you know, if he played however many weeks in a row, like he was ready to play those weeks in a row, which Scotty, he's played really well for the most part from end of February, March, April. And then as the year's gone, or the months have gone by in the year, you know, hasn't been as good at winning in the summer. And I hadn't played a ton in the fall, but that's to me, the formula that's been missing is like, can you keep the stamina up the entire year to win golf tournaments? Not, we know he can finish top five. It's more about, can you win at the clip that we think Scotty can win at? And I think the one thing he would look at in the future is like tightening up his schedule a little bit, instead of playing 25 events, playing 20.
It's a great point, and I wonder what that schedule ends up looking like, because he does feel like a course for course type player at you know, high level challenging venues. I mean, four of his seven wins in his career thus far, you know, two of those are repeats. You know, he's now won the Arnold Palmer Invitational twice and the WM Phoenix Open twice.
It wouldn't surprise me for him to like completely omit a lot of the West Coast. Like, he played in the Amex this year. Like, that's not like the type of golf course that he should be playing. Like, he's a guy that needs to be playing on hard golf courses. I get starting the year, kind of getting your feet underneath you. And even like Century, like Rory, Tiger never played Century because it was a shootout. And, you know, he can win there. He's just, to me, it's like, all right, if Scotty wants to win more and not wear himself out, it's like, pick where you want to play, where you know you can go win. That's what Tiger used to do.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. Definitely want to keep an eye on it. And yeah, I mean, as you and I know well, kids change everything, you know, so it's there. That's going to be an adjustment period for him and for Meredith, of course. And the guy I want to get to next is Will Zalatoris. You were with the Zalatoris Wyndham Clark group on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And just looking at his results this year. So started off with a miscut at Sony. Amex, he finishes tied for 34th. Farmers, he finishes tied for 13th. Genesis finishes tied for 2nd. And now at the Arnold Palmer Invitational, finishes tied for 4th. I mean, personally, from where we started this year, really kind of going back to the way we were talking about Will at the Hero, my mind is blown at how fast we got to this version of Will Zalatoris. I mean, given where we were with the eye test for both the putting and just looking at that sort of rebuilt swing in December, you know, wondering when is it going to all kind of come together in a tournament setting? And here we are. I mean, back to back top five finishes in signature events. My question for you is, I mean, are we looking at a version of Will Zalatoris that could somehow be better than the pre-surgery version now that he's kind of established some consistency with that broomstick?
Well, it doesn't seem like at this point that he's going to be playing his way out of tournaments like he used to a little bit with the putter at times. And with this kind of modified swing where he's got a little less side bend in his golf swing, a little less stiff at setup, you know, dude, the ball striking's there. It's back and looks exactly the same to me as it did. I think he was probably a little better driver of the ball. And I'm looking at the stats this week and, and he was third and off the tee this week. So I'm saying like, I just think he was a little better off the tee before his injury and he's still elite. I'm just telling you like how good it used to be. It was like, it was stupid. He's still right there. Like as a top five driver of the golf ball on tour with the driver in his hands, it's, I'm just telling you, that's the level that he was at. And he's still just like a step below that. Iron game's ridiculous. The putter to me, and you see it all the time with the guys that go to Broomstick, when you get something heavy in their hands and something new, it's a new system to learn. And I think for me, it just looks like he's got a better pace to his stroke. There's no rush to it. And the ball's coming off, and I could see it from the side of the green. It's rolling end over end, which is a great sign. So he's putting a great roll on the golf ball. But as far as like what we expect to see from Will Zalatoris, and I'll start lumping in Wyndham Clark in here as well, because I could not have been more impressed with what I saw from Wyndham Clark on Sunday. Didn't quite get the putts to go in like in the last 13 holes, besides making one on 18 that was like, oh man, if I needed that a little earlier in the round. But both of these two guys, I walked away thinking, man, these two dudes have everything that you were looking for as far as just attitude, talent, and just the ability to be there at these big events, kind of similar to, you know, I was kind of thinking of a comparison. It was like, all right, Wyndham Clark, he won Wells Fargo last year, the signature event. He wins the U.S. Open at Pebble, or excuse me, U.S. Open at LACC. And we're still thinking like, all right, he's a breakout guy. And then he goes and wins at Pebble on a 54-hole event. And for me, like as somebody who watches the game and has seen him play a little bit, not as much as some of these other guys, in my head, I'm thinking like, all right, where is Wyndham Clark in the game right now? Like, is he the best? Like, can he be a number one, number two player in the world? Where does he stack up? And I think like him getting in contention here at Bay Hill, and now I'm going back. It's like, all right, let's look at the golf courses. We have Wells Fargo. That's a pretty big ballpark. LACC was a pretty big ballpark, and then Pebble Beach. Like totally different conditions from those. So you have to like take spin off the golf ball, a fairly big ballpark. But, and then we get here at Bay Hill this week, which is not a big ballpark. One, you have to be so accurate. So all that to say is that same with Will Zalatoris, they're just players that can play on a lot of different styles of golf courses. Their games translate well. And Wyndham Clark to me reminds me of the attitude and swagger that Brooks Koepka brought to the PGA Tour and major championships, where you just start, I think we're going to start to see him on tops of these big time leaderboards because of the way he plays the game and the style in which he plays the game as well, which I think translates to big boy golf.
It's interesting because if you're looking at Will Zalatoris' trajectory this year, it's just a straight line up. You know, where he started the year was struggling and he's just consistently improved in every start since then, you know, basically to where we are now. Whereas Wyndham, he of course he's got the win in the 54 hole shortened, you know, version of the AT&T Pro-Am, the solo second here now. But you look at the rest of the schedule and it's kind of been a mixed bag for him this year. T29 at Century, T39 at Amex, T41 at the WM, and misses the cut at the Genesis. So, I mean, as we kind of go into the, you have your hand up here, so I'm going to call on you like I'm in a classroom here. What do you got for me?
Who does that remind you of? Like who used to do the exact same thing?
That's a great call. Like a Koepka type of player. So to kind of parse through your statement a little bit is like, what I'm hearing you say is it's not necessarily for Wyndham the venue he's at anymore, because to your point, we've now seen him succeed in big ballparks and you know, tighter tests. But it's more of a sign of the stature of the event he's playing in.
It's a big game.
So I assume if we're looking at the Players and the Masters in a month, you really like his chances at both those places.
I think you're going to see him at these like big time events. I just think he's a player that rises to the occasion. I don't think he's scared of it. I think, like, similar to Brooks Koepka, like, if he's going to play at TPC Craig Ranch, he's just not going to get as hyped up for it. And I think his game, he's a very smart player too. Like, he's got all this power, but he also plays with intelligence to be able to put the ball in the fairway and trust his long iron game. It's being able to dissect golf courses and know what a good score is that day, where I think like Wyndham almost gets lost on these mm-hmm. events that where you can shoot a million under because there's just no strategy involved. I think he does better when his mind has to focus on playing big boy golf, kind of similar to Brooks was the same way.
This is so mind blowing to me because I was just in hearing you talk about that. It's like, let me go look back at, I know he hasn't been around for a ton of time. He certainly had the talent for a long period of time, but really that win last year at the Wells Fargo in what was then a designated event was his big sort of breakthrough onto the scene. Right, and of course, yeah. He follows that up in a couple months of the US Open. So I wonder what his historical record is in some of the majors. Wyndham Clark has never played in the Masters.
There you go.
Isn't that interesting? I mean, I guess it's not super interesting.
It's kind of like it's the best segue in the world if you wanted to get into some of the things he talked about, like that Rory mentioned on. Because honestly, I'll kind of set that up for you as you go.
We
saw what Rory McIlroy, and we've talked about this on the podcast that I fully support a top 100 rolling 30 off relegation system every year. And this isn't something that's new. It's a lot of the players have been talking about it, but Rory mentioning it in a press conference after his round, or just doing some media after the round, just talking about how he would like to see a tighter top of the world golf tour. And Wyndham also agreed with that. And a lot of people took issue with Wyndham Clark saying that because it's like, hey, buddy, like you weren't a top 100 player in the world until last year. Who are you to say, you know, like, would your opinion have been the same on this matter 2 years ago than it is right now? And it's just kind of a product of the situation you're in, which is, you know, Wyndham's obviously now he's a top 10 player in the world and his opinions have changed. So, but all right, here's a player who's been on the PGA Tour before. I've been somebody who I don't agree with what the top players in the world have kind of seen the way the games should be going, but also I've been a top 50 player in the world where I'm like, okay, I can see what they're saying. So I have different perspectives in this. And then now I'm in the media side where I understand, like, from a network rating standpoint, what we need to see. And I have totally shifted in towards this top 100 format for a global whether it's a global PGA Tour, a top PGA Tour tour. To me, I think that's going to be getting the players playing against each other the most. You don't have to have these like crazy purses. And even if you do, you could keep them there and it's going to be a little less at some of like if John Deere and the Cognizant mm-hmm. are on this lower Korn Ferry Tour Plus, it's like,
yeah,
they won't have to pay as much over down there. So all that to say is we got some audio that you can tee up on this.
Yes. And we're going to do this. We'll do this back to back. We're going to hear Rory on Friday setting up the sort of initial idea. And then we'll hear Wyndham's sort of furthering of that line of thought on Saturday after his round. Question and answer included. So you have the full context. So let's start here with Rory on Friday.
Would you have preferred more players? I mean, there's only 69 in this one, the way it worked out. Did they maybe need to look at that next year?
No, I mean, I'm all for making it more cutthroat, more competitive. I'm like, probably won't be very popular for saying this, but I'm all for less players and less tour cards and the best of the best.
Rory talked yesterday about how he wants the tour to be a little leaner, maybe more cutthroat, fewer guys keep cards. Is that something that you're in favor for? Smaller fields and fewer members?
I think it would be amazing if our tour was 100 guys, and kind of said this a few times, 100 guys, and we have 20 guys that get relegated every time, every year, doesn't matter who you are. And I think it would be exciting because you come down to the end of the year, people are looking who's going to win the FedEx, and then you're looking at who's not going to be here next year. I'm probably with Rory on that. I don't know what that number is, but I think it's just nice to elevate the product and make it to where the best players are playing on TV more often and against each other.
So just, I think here's, if I'm trying to put a hat on where I'm being a Wyndham apologist, or I'm trying to kind of, see what he's trying to say here. He follows this with another answer where they're asking specifics on numbers. He said, look, that's above my pay grade. I'm not sure, but I just like to see a system with, X amount of players. It's a hard number, and then a relegation system. So I think the things to take away from this are, and also part of that follow-up question was, you're talking about this event here, right? So this was supposed to be a 70-player field that ended up being a 69-player field. And Wyndham's advocating actually for a larger field, for a 100-player field, okay? And if we're talking about over the course of a season, wherever Wyndham was prior to being a top 100 player in the world, he's advocating for a promotion relegation system that see 20 lose their cards and 20 or whatever gain their cards. So he is actually advocating for a system that is something of an open shop. I mean, certainly more open than some other tours in the world right now. And he's advocating for something, but he's just, I think what he's trying to say here is, hey, like we have to acknowledge the different needs we have across the game. As you just kind of noted here, there are, if this thing is going to become an investment for SSG or others, you got to create a return on that. How do you do that? You create value through television contracts and broadcasters, and it's hard to deliver on that if you don't have some driving interest through a strong strength of field. So I'm curious how this landed for you both, from all the perspectives that you just listed as a former tour pro who was in both sides of the camp, as a broadcaster, and then maybe just as a fan of the game and just seeing the way that people reacted to this very strongly on social media and the aftermath of these comments.
Yeah, let's just think about it this way. So as it stands now, the PGA Tour, let's say there's 200 players, right? We cut down to 125. So we're cutting 75 dudes every year. And that's mm-hmm. been a little bit more cutthroat into we're cutting 130 players to make the playoffs from 200 all the way down to 70, right? Mm-hmm. And really even more cutthroat than that to make signature events, we're cutting 150 players. So we are in a very cutthroat system as it is. So I think you see players across the PGA Tour maybe disagreeing with why do we need to continue to make it more cutthroat when we already have a pretty cutthroat system as it is that rewards players that are in signature events with more FedEx Cup points based on the new distribution list this year. I see both sides of it. I do think that the problem that we have right now on the PGA Tour is that outside the signature events, unless you run into a lucky situation at the Amex where you have a bunch of top tour players playing and then you have a Nick Dunlap winning, you can't sell these stories every week. You know what I mean? Like you could sell like a story every month, but, and we had this conversation with some of our guys this week. It's tough. Like, listen, like I think Jake Knapp winning and Austin Eckroat winning, like these are like bona fide studs and stars, but it's just hard for the local dude who watches the PGA Tour week, unless you follow it, it's hard to turn on the TV and see that name. And you're just like, I know who he is. I know how good this guy is, but how do I get Charlie's family to care about Austin Eckroat and Jake Knapp? We care about them. Actually, your family's a bad example. I'm sure they're a big supporters of the pod and they know Jake Knapp's a guy that we support, but we're talking about just new names and stories.
Yeah.
And that's the problem that we have right now is that we're having to sell these stories too often on non-signature event weeks. And I think if you had a PGA Tour schedule with 100 guys that had a schedule that had these players, mainly the top players, playing week in, week out, you have to sell these stories less, is what we would think would happen. Mm-hmm. And would maybe garner interest every week where you see the leaderboard and you're like, okay, know these names, like I'm tuning in. Mm-hmm. So I think that's where we're at right now on the PGA Tour from a network standpoint. It's like, okay, this leaderboard isn't great at all. And this is going to be tough to sell and get people to watch. Our ratings are, if you look across the board from NBC, CBS, whatever, like the ratings are down, like mm-hmm. they're down. So we have got to figure out a way to make the product better. It's not just us, it's the PGA Tour, it's the way in which the PGA Tour runs their tour to keep interest in helping the networks out, because right now, like, it's hard to sell some of these events that we're having to try to find stories every week, you know what I mean?
100%. And I wonder if, you know, and that's sort of the sort of money making side of it, the broadcasting piece of it, you know, selling ads against it. I wonder if internally, you know, for players, that it would actually be cleaner to have these more rigid categories, or just to clearly communicate, this is what your playing opportunities are going to look like at the beginning of a year. Because as we've talked about as well, one of the consistent storylines we've seen is all these guys who just think they've got their tour card coming off the Korn Ferry Tour and all these various different reshuffle categories, Q School, whatever else, they keep trying to play and they can't get in a bunch of these events at the beginning of the year. It's so much so that I think the Valspar and I think maybe both Houston and Valero are going to go to expanded fields to get more of these guys playing opportunities. And so to me, it's like, I'd almost would rather be more upfront. I mean, if that's the way I'd want it to be, if this was my livelihood, is like, hey, just tell me the hard truth up front of what I'm going to be, you know, be able to get to do this year, instead of over promising and under delivering. And I think that's where, you know, kind of takes us back to where, you know, when we kind of sketched out what we're hoping to see in 2025 and beyond, is let's just stratify the tours. Like, let's just be realistic about it. Like, it'd be great if we lived in a world where everyone, you know, cared the way we do about the Austin Eckroats and the Jake Knapps of the world and wanted to tune in, and they did huge TV ratings and, you know, it paid for everyone's salaries. But like, in reality, the thing that's going to probably help even the guys who are, you know, of lower popularity and lower status would be a big platinum tour that is feels more like a closed shop, that definitely has promotion and relegation opportunities, but the big tour that a big sponsor is willing to come in and pay for.
Exactly.
There are a limited amount of events, you know, once a month maybe, that we know all the players are going to show up, PGA Tour, Live, whatever. And then this more regular PGA Tour that is making realistic asks of the John Deeres of the world and the sponsors and saying, hey, this is the level of player. And by the way, and all the guys who got your card, this is what your opportunities are going to be to play in this year.
Where do you think, just from a purse perspective, like if you had to say on the Platinum Tour, what that purse should be versus like what the relegated PGA Tour would be? So like, for instance, the John Deere events versus like the Bay Hill events, like, do you think it's like, I was thinking like somewhere around the 20 million, like anywhere between the, like a 15 to 25 would probably be the platinum, and then maybe somewhere between like 3 to 7 in the other. Is that
there? That sounds about right to me. I mean, just, I'd have to kind of look, you know, individually each of those purses, but I mean, for me, it's like almost like you want to, without saying a hard number, it's like you'd want to take whatever the current signature event and major purses are and bump those up 25% if there's a big sponsor coming in and willing to invest in it, because they know there's going to be a ton of interest in this thing because there are less events. And then you want to take the regular PGA Tour events, you know, not to nitpick on John Deere, but those level events, and knock them down by at least 25%. Because what I know isn't sustainable, and we talked about this around the Sony, is, you know, this ask the tour is making of all these tournaments to up their purses by 250,000 this year, 500,000 the next couple years, and maybe more going forward. And that's coming directly out of the checks they're writing to those local charities. And so they're saying, I mean, can we really do this anymore? And so it's like, and again, it's like, that's my frustration with the way people react to this on social media, is like they want to rail against, you know, this closed shop tour, and they want to say, you know, I thought this game used to be about, you know, merit based and playing opportunities for everyone, and that's the driving principle of the tour, is create playing opportunities for its members. It's like, that's all good and fine, but then when you sit down and you look at the realistic, you know, balance sheets for these things, and how are we going to make money, and how are we going to kind of, you know, trickle that down to all the various places we're hoping to impact and touch, whether that's a check for a player or whether that's a check for a charity, it just doesn't make sense the way we've been doing it. And so, I mean,
the PGA Tour, the problems that they have, like, you know, they're trying to keep the players, like, first, they're trying to keep them as happy as they can be, to where they're paid appropriately, or at least somewhat comparable to the live players. And that affects charity. It affects a trickle down to eventually a watered down product to the non-signature events. And listen, the rights fees for the PGA Tour are overinflated, you know, like they're just not what the networks paid for. And of course, now the networks are, what they've had to do is to make a profit. It's more commercials, which hurts the fans in the long run in this. So the whole thing goes like this, you know, if the rights fees were lower, you have less commercials. And listen, it's just because the networks aren't seeing the return in the ratings. So it's just a very difficult thing that the PGA Tour has to navigate, because they need the product to be as profitable for the players, for the networks, and ultimately it makes the fan experience as good as it can possibly be, because that's what gets them to watch every week and to care, you know?
Yeah, I think that's probably where we start heading, as these investors who are now very much interested in the financial viability and growth of the product going forward. That's probably something that happens, you know, whether that's just kind of behind the scenes assessing where we're at and where we want to go right now, but then maybe some actual concrete changes next year, you know, going forward. I think, you know, the changes I would suggest if we're talking about playing opportunities for this year is, you know, or just even going forward, is I'd like to see the winners category move above the next 10 and swing five categories. Cause I think that's been a weird one this year where, a guy who's,
I don't even
a
know
winner.
Those categories, man. I can't even get that far on this debate because I don't understand the criteria.
I mean, I just think it's, you know, it's just weird to have guys that feel like they're deserving not getting to some of these events. And I'm talking about current form. Like if that's going to be the thing, is we're trying to create these ways for guys who aren't already in our top 50 to play their way in, like, let's really, you know, try to do that for that limited pool, not everybody, but for that limited pool. And then I'm curious where you kind of land on some sponsor exemptions, both thus far and going forward, because I think that's the other one where there was some chatter online after Rory's cutthroat comments that was basically like, hey, like, so are we cutting off Tiger sponsor exemptions? Like, I mean, I'm not advocating that. I think that you forever give Tiger exemptions, because it folds back into what we're talking about from a broadcast perspective, right? Like, he's going to draw eyeballs. So that's going to line that's brings money into the game that gets distributed and makes everyone happy. But I think, you know, I don't know. Like, I mean, I look at like this way, like Jake Knapp after Torrey plays well, sixth in the swing five, doesn't get into Pebble, would have loved to seen him there, but instead those exemptions go to different pros, and that's fine. That's a decision that was made, but just curious, you know, if you feel like any suggestions you would make to the current model going forward,
yeah,
in terms of how those fields are composed.
I liked 70 there this week. Would 100 have been fine? Yeah. I think there is every signature event, probably 10 to 15 guys that I would like to see playing. But I don't necessarily feel like 120 should be there. I think 100's a good number, probably maybe 90, 80. But it was cool playing twosomes right from the get-go. It just felt like a big time event right from the beginning of the event. But I don't know if we're going to see the big changes next year, if it'll take another year after that, but hopefully we get there.
Yeah. Well, this is I'm going to do my little segue here from talking about TV contract values and things that I'm probably not qualified to talk about. And we probably should have another business, sports business expert on the show to break these things down for us. But I'm moving over to Friday happy hour with Smiley because the reviews are in and the people loved it. Before we get too far, I'm wondering if I can get a retroactive video credit on my the great shooting I did on your tee shot on 16 at Spyglass Hill. Max Homa was kind enough to roast. Like, he kind of went easy on you with the rose. He said, I love, he's like, it's hard to roast people's swings when they're sitting right in front of you.
Listen, happy hour has been a success so far. You know, it kind of started at Phoenix. It was kind of happy hour on a Saturday where the leaders were on the front nine and the backside of the wave was coming through. So it was a happy hour feel on a Saturday, even though we were supposed to have the leaders. So that's where kind of the idea came about to continue it on. I went to the Cognizant, had Paul Goldschmidt come on, and they got into obviously this past week, Bay Hill, and luckily and fortunate to have Jordan Spieth and Max Homa take time to come and do it, because listen, it, you know, it's a big event. Like, to have these players come by and say, hey, it's important for the players to get on TV to enhance the fan experience and to give perspective. Dude, the entire rest of the weekend, we were, as broadcasters, were referring to nuggets that Max Homa and Jordan gave us about the golf course, because listen, we see it, we walk it, but we're not playing it. We don't pick up on certain things like these players are. And to me, it just was an added perspective, and it set us up really for what we were looking forward to for Saturday and Sunday in the weekend. And yes, we had some fun, but we also kind of got golf nerdy in there as well. So, you know, it felt like basically us doing our, you know, the podcast just on TV, you know. And And so to me, it was a big success. We're doing it, the players on 17, which is going to be just kind of surreal, to be honest. It's going to be really cool for me to do that with my first running mate, Kevin Kisner. So hopefully we can maybe snag another player or two to come by, because I really think it just, you know, it's not overbearing. It's just like an hour and a half. It doesn't ruin the coverage, because I think it just gives us just that added oomph of how the golf course is playing. It's great exposure for the players. It's exposure for the players tournament, but the player that comes in,
the lowercase players and the all caps players. We're yes. distinguishing between those two.
Honestly, just, you know, I got a ton of support out there on Saturday and Sunday at Bay Hill, of just, fans that were out there that said they enjoyed it. So it was really, really cool, to see that. I'm obviously thankful to, the NBC team for giving me the opportunity to highlight these players and having them come in and just having bar like conversations with them, if you will, just like we're sitting on the couch, just hanging out, which is the vibe that we kind of treat our podcast as well with these interviews. It's just kind of just tour talk, if you will. So it's been really successful so far. I'm looking forward to not only this week, but the rest of the NBC swing doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I am fired up to get a second helping of Koff and Kiz out there at 17 Sawgrass. Just brief one for you there. Have you looked up the Florida state flag? Do you know what that looks like? You prepared in case that hits the broadcast on Friday? We have time. I'm just putting you on notice right now.
Is it just a big orange?
I actually do not know what a Florida State flag looks like, so I'm furiously Googling this.
I'm just picturing like a big clementine in the middle of the flag.
Oh, you know what? That doesn't look what I thought it would look like. I just say Google that if I were you. Just make sure you're prepped in case you get an on-air moment where the infamous misidentification of the Arizona State flag was.
We didn't
a great
misidentify
way to kick off.
I actually
you just didn't identify it at all.
I tap danced around it, actually.
I mean, there was. If I'm getting critical, there should have been enough in the way of context clues to decide what that flag was. But listen, it made for good TV. That's all that matters.
You don't even want to know what my impulsive answer would have been. So I was just like,
That's obviously y'all, that was a really fun watch, the WM. So excited for more of that. And I also should say, like, they're in terms of the responses that were coming in, it's cool to see, you know, the no laying up guys who traditionally have, you know, had critiques of NBC Sports Golf Channel broadcasts and really, really enjoyed this product. And I mean, that's an encouraging, that's a cool piece of feedback to see. You know, I mean, I think that those types of things, you know, their point there was, look, we're just asking for to try stuff. And this is something that is, you know, it's a Friday. We're not in the weekend yet. It's a way to kind of make the broadcast entertaining, but also to your point with Max and Jordan, informative. You know, I mean, they're giving you nuggets that you can take and use the rest of the week. So, cool stuff. Excited for more this week with Kevin Kisner. What is the latest? Do we have any updates on the players' kayak plan on Wednesday? Is that materializing or is that kind of falling by the wayside?
I just haven't pushed forward. I just felt like I felt like it was going to be.
Back on the kayak?
I felt like it was going to be too much. Listen, I just think the spotlight would have been too much on me in there, because, like, dude, as soon as you get in a kayak in the water, it's just like, what are we doing here? You know, especially on that stage, like on 17 at the Sony, it's just like, all right, we're just hanging out here. Nobody's around. But yeah, like, too much could go wrong. Maybe in the future we'll have to, I'll see about it this week. I'm not expecting
just
to do it.
Just don't rule it out. Don't rule it out.
No, not ruling it out.
If they bring you the kayak and the GoPro, I'd say hop in there. Make it happen.
Yeah, not ruling it out, but yeah.
Okay, well, that's your happy hour players, you know, roundup and preview. So pump for that this week. A few other ones kind of want to get here. Just some updates from around the golf world. Going over to LIV. There was a 3-way playoff to finish up the LIV Hong Kong event that Abraham Ancer won over Paul Casey and Cam Smith. I guess this is Abe Ancer's first LIV title. I also got to know here, look, one of the better showings I've seen out of your cliques. Had a hot start out of the gate on Friday.
How'd we finish?
A little bit over the next 2 days. Finished fifth as a team, but I've seen the cliques lower on the leaderboard for a while. So I've just kind of, it was good to open up that scoreboard on Friday
Huge.
Morning. So, cliques, big
bump. Top five.
My wild cards finished a combined 11 over, but could have been a lot worse if AK hadn't fired a 65, 5 under 65 on Sunday. I mean, your thoughts on this? This is AK's first under par round on LIV. Are you ready to update your take yet? Or we need kind of like Scotty's putting, we need to see a little bit more.
Listen, I'm never going to be rooting against the guy, you know. I want Anthony Kim to have success. I want him to play well. Do I think, would he have shot 90 at Bay Hill? I think he would have shot in the mid 80s. Yeah. I'm telling you, if he's shooting those scores that I've seen on the LIV, he would have shot in the mid 80s at Bay Hill. And
this is like a 6,700 yard course in Hong Kong. This is the course this weekend. And Phil shot 80 on Friday.
I'm telling you, he wasn't ready for what I just saw last week. But hey, look, props to
him.
Good for him, yeah. Shooting 5 under. Cam Smith losing in a playoff as the prior week I mentioned. I'm not buying stock in Cam Smith, and of course he loses in a playoff. So
I of course am the stockholder, the Cam Smith stockholder on the show. So really glad to see that one pay early dividends.
Waka was one back. I mean, it's gonna be hard week. For us as we get to like the Masters when we start to try to figure out who's gonna be contending. From the LIV side, we expect to see Rahm, Waco, Neiman. You expect to maybe see Bryson contending, you know, and do one of them pull it off? I don't know, but I'm excited to see kind of how they play. They had 3 of the top like 6 last year at the Masters. So it's going to be a big lead up here in the next month or so.
Did you see where Legion 13 finished?
Did they win?
DFL.
Really?
Off scene. tough scene for Legion 13. Yeah, we got
so Surratt played that. Probably bad, and then
Hatton. Vincent.
I saw Hatton putting with the wedge.
He was that was maybe one of my favorite updates for the week. I also love that. Like, I wonder how that was handled within the team room. First of all, I don't know how many holes that happened for. If this was just a one-off thing. But, you know, it's one thing to do Tyrrell Hatton things when it's just Tyrrell Hatton you're impacting, and I guess by an extension of that, your team, your caddy. But now you actually have a real set of three other guys out there playing, hoping to make some cash. And maybe the wedge putt isn't looked at as such a cheeky shenanigan any longer.
I heard, by the way, what Rahm got paid, and still it makes the decision even dumber to me. Still, it doesn't
more
make any
or less
sense.
Than what was reported.
Less.
Less.
Like the big money that was reported is just like a potential in the equity of what the team might become.
Yeah, a numbers just, fudge. I mean,
I don't get it. I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, it's who are we to say? I mean, I if he sees value there, I mean, if I'd say it this way, if it realizes that value, then it's a pretty simple.
No,
easy decision.
It's real money that he's getting paid. Yeah. I mean, I'm not talking. I mean, he's getting paid more than $100 million, but it's not to what we thought it was. So, I mean, maybe it could become that, but there's no telling too. The PGA Tour are giving equity to players as well, but we're not sure exactly. Like, that isn't just cash at hand, right? Where this is instant cash. So, and cash is king. So maybe that's what won.
I just have one bone to pick with Liv before we get off the topic. I've been to your website two or three times now, to your shop portal, and I'm really trying to get an AK Wildcards hat. Like, I'm trying to support my cards, and you don't sell it yet. So can somebody please sell the AK Wildcards hat? Because I'd love to buy. I'd love to support. That's my item. I'm sure nobody with any power over that is going to do anything.
Where do they
about
play
it.
Next?
They play in Miami the week before the Masters next.
Wow, they so got some the time off. Tune-up.
They do. So although I think there
Man,
is
the
an
crowds
Asian
are
going to
be terrible
event.
For the first three events for them. Like, that Doral crowd's not going to be great.
No, not at all. I don't know how many guys. I saw Anthony Kim is playing in an Asian Tour event this next week.
Oh, he is.
And I'm not sure if there are going to be others who are trying to make a top 50 bid when that cut off, you know, for the Masters before that cut off. I mean,
hey,
I think.
Do you hear Anthony Kim like drop this week from his like shoulder because he didn't know you dropped from your knee? Like, he didn't know about that rule change.
Did he really?
He like dropped a ball from his shoulder because he didn't know. And apparently Dustin Johnson was walking him through on how to use a TrackMan. It's like, which is the funniest thing in the world, right?
Dude, I love this. Like, Anthony Kim was like cryogenically frozen for 12 years. Seriously. And we just like thawed him out. We're like, hey, go play golf. Like, what's a drone, dude? What are these things flying around my head?
I'm like, every update I keep hearing about Anthony Kim learning about modern golf technology has been an update worth reading.
Taylor Swift isn't just a country singer anymore. What happened the last 12 years? that is good stuff. Well, that's what we have for Liv. And then I just wanted to quickly hit just some updates on you know, the opposite field PGA Tour event this week, because down in Puerto Rico, Bryce Garnett beats Eric Barnes in a playoff. Worth noting, because Ben Cole's the guy that we've had in that Korn Ferry Tour grads group looking at, you know, maybe picking off a win on the PGA Tour. He was leading heading into the final round, and he finishes T6 there. So doesn't not just first one, but a guy who's playing some good golf right now. And then big shout out to Jackson Van Paris, who is a Vanderbilt junior from Pinehurst, North Carolina, played in this event as an amateur, shoots 64 in the final round to finish T10. So pretty cool stuff for him. I'm not sure where Jackson stood in the PGA Tour U accelerated standings prior to this event, but he just got 2 points right there, one for making a cut in the PGA Tour event and another for finishing top 10. So Jackson, shout out to you. Pinehurst, North Carolina, stand up. Love that for him. So that's really that's what we have for the show. We're going to do a second episode this week to kind of both get you ready for Players Championship, recap you on our one and done picks this last week. Spoiler alert, Smiley's still a ways behind me Thanks, courtesy of my Jake Knapp winner's pick. But we'll give you those picks, maybe talk about some DFS picks, maybe get to some swing notes as well in that episode. But yeah, that's what I got for the week. Smiley, any final thoughts for the good people listening and watching right now as you head off to do some work here at the Players?
Yeah, beautiful day here. TPC Sawgrass, about to throw some clothes on, do some laundry today, but I'm going to go to the Srixon trailer to get a driver built. Yeah, so I'm going to go do that real quick.
Do we have any heads we're looking at? Any shafts we're looking at? Like,
this graphite, kind of it's like that orange shaft.
Oh, the Tour. Yeah, the one that Hideki has, I think. Design or Tour.
It's like torquing shaft. We're going to put a little hot melt in the heel to try to make sure I can, like, I want that ball to go left. Like, I want, like, if it's going left, it's like, okay, I can fix that. But I want to eliminate the right side of the golf course. I'm tired of hitting the heel. I'm tired of hitting it right and making good swings and it just sliding way right. So we're hopefully going to get something built up that matches what I'm trying to do.
And hopefully see footage of that on a Friday happy hour coming soon when you're watching an upcoming tournament. But yeah, that's what we got for today's episode. We appreciate you watching and listening, and we will talk to you back here very soon.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.